In tonight's episode, we talk a lot about Ludwig Marine. Now, let me tell you a little bit about Ludwig before we get started. Ludwig Marine is a full-service marine dealership with brands like Ranger, Triton, War Eagle, Mercury, Yamaha, Tohatsu, Honda, Gator Tail, Copperhead, and the new kids on the block who are locally made in Ruston, Louisiana, Reaper Boats. Duck guys, listen to me. Throw your favorite motor on the Timber Reaper ST, and boys, you're going to have something that everybody will be jealous of. For all your new boat needs, any accessories or additions, go see Ludwig Marine on Highway 33 in Farmerville, just as you cross beautiful Lake Darbonne, or on 165 South in Monroe. So, the Wise Eye, it's currently at my house, and for a few reasons. Number one, it's late in the year, and I've got some toes that need thinning out on my place. Number two, I enjoy wild hog sausage. Now, I've got some wild hogs on my place, okay? I've also got some wild hogs, and the other night, the Wise Eye went off, let me know that one of them was out there. I ran out there in my long handles and my Bloodline hoodie, took it out, and I love the aspect that I can do that. I can be sitting here, got a hog detected, go out there and take care of it. And then lastly, I've got probably the smartest dog I've ever had right now. And this dog knows how to get around the, you know, I've got an in-the-ground fence, and she knows how to get around that. The Wise Eye lets me know when she exceeds that. So the best thing going sale camera-wise, man, these are some great cameras. You can find them at the Digital Outdoor Store on Facebook. Amazon's got them, and you can also see them on the Wise Eye Technologies web page. Some of the greatest cameras, clear pictures, incredible camera trigger speed. Check them out. Wise Eyes, they're the way to go. Well, we're going to do a little bit of something different today. We're going to talk fishing. Hunting's kind of trending out. A lot of guys in North Louisiana have been hunting pretty hard since October and kind of got a little fishing on our mind. In fact, I went fishing the other day and it kind of gave me the itch to do this podcast. So, we're going to talk a little preseason fishing gear, prep, what you can do, how you can keep everything in working order. Gary Calloway from Ludwig Marine. You're going to like it. Gary's a good guy. I had never spoken with Gary before we talked. And trust me, I think I'm going to talk to him a lot from now on because this guy's number one, a wealth of knowledge, and he's just an overall good dude. So give a listen to this one. I hope you guys like it. Going to try something a little bit different this week. Deer season's kind of winding down. I've been after it hard since the first part of October. I know a lot of guys are right there with me, maybe just a little bit behind me, but it's kind of, I got my crappie whistle wet the other day, I guess you'd say, and now I'm really, really liking fishing. So I got a guy come on to talk to us, Gary Calloway, and Gary is really, he's a good fisherman. And he knows about a little bit about them boats, a little bit, don't you, Gary?
Yes, sir.
tell us where you work at, Gary.
Ludwig Marine on Lake Darbonne, Farmerville, Louisiana.
How long you been there?
6 years.
Yeah. So I've been talking with Gary for about, I don't know, 10 minutes before we got started on here, and I can already tell the guy he puts a lot of thought and some of the stuff that he does, and I'm already excited for this one to talk about. What we want to talk about, Gary, you know, some of the prep that's going to go in. Some of these people coming off hunting season, they're looking at going fishing. What's some of the prep? That's kind of what I want to talk about, some of the things they need to be doing before they get going out on that water and before they get ready to fish, what are supposed to be doing. But right now, I want to talk about you real quick. Give us a little background on you, bud.
I've been 47 years old, pretty much fished my whole life, and been in the boating industry over 30 years now, and been at the crappie thing since about 07. Left the bass scene to come to the crappie side, and it's just been a good thing.
Yeah. Now, you said you live out in East Texas for a little while?
I did. I cut my teeth on Sam Rayburn, Toledo Bend, and Lake Conroe for a lot of years from, I'd say 12, 13 years old on up to about 32, 33 years old is when I decided to move back this way.
So how does Sam Rayburn compare? I've heard that. I've got a guy actually I work with that talks about Sam Rayburn. How does it compare to the waters over here that some of these local guys are fishing in North Louisiana?
It's just a lot bigger body of water. Still has all the same elements, you know, moss, stumps, flats, and submerged timber. It's just on a, you kind of have to take it and break it down in pieces because you can fit three or four darbone into that one lake.
Man.
And, so it's a good bit. It can be overwhelming just because it's so big, but it's really just a great fishery that offers everything, every style of fishing that a man could think he wants to do.
Yeah, you know, and it's odd that you say that because I've heard people talk about crappie fishing. The guy that I work with is a bass fisherman. I mean, it's, you know, it does sound like it's something that something for everybody, really.
It is. There's literally every fish you want to talk about, from crappie, catfish, bass, even the big gar. They've killed gar over 200 pounds on that thing bow fishing. So it's literally got everything there. It's just it's so big you have to kind of respect it as a big body of water.
Yeah, I can.
But outside of that, it's a great place.
Yeah, it sounds like it's definitely a spot that you really want to be ready for when you go over there, for sure.
Yeah, it definitely.
So your tournament fishing career started over there?
Yeah, I started there in a Red Man series back in the mid-90s. And we could trailer boats back then and fish out of small rigs. Seen it leave that and go into where you had to have a 17-foot boat with a running live well and 125 minimum to make the series, or they wouldn't even let you qualify to fish. And it just went from there to what we see now.
Mm-hmm. How was it? Did you find you liked that a lot back then, or was it a little bit overwhelming at certain times?
No, I loved it. It's probably what's driven me this entire time.
Okay. So you did that from what, mid-90s till when?
Mid-90s, 07, I left Texas to come back to Louisiana just to get back towards the home ground where all my family's from. And found myself looking around trying to figure out what I was going to do here. Fell off in the crappie scene and just hung with it and trying to learn it and keep growing with it, you know?
Yeah, I tell you, man, it's something that I'm really proud to see. Number one, that it is growing. Number two, we've got a lot of support in this area in the crappie fishing. You know, we've got a lot of good places to fish. We've got a lot of communities that are putting a lot of effort into attracting fishermen. And it's just, I think it's a really good, I think we're seeing the beginnings of something that's going to be really special around here.
I agree. It's something that a lot of different people that are not necessarily true tournament fishermen can relate to, because they've done it at some point in time in their life, you know?
Yeah. Hey, I tell you, you know, we were talking earlier about the crappie fishing and how it's, you know, this is the beginning of it. And you know, it's going to take several years for it, you know, to probably blossom into something like what bass is. I was listening to a podcast today, and it's in, I think it's out of Illinois or something like that. You know, I'm just trying to figure out the format of some of these fishing podcasts. And one guy was from Illinois and one guy was from Indiana, and they were talking about fishing up there. And all of a sudden one of the guys had came down and fished darbone, and he mentioned Lake Darbone, this, that, and the other. And then they started talking about, you know, other lakes around Grenada and whatnot. And I thought, man, that is really cool. I had no idea that they were even going to talk about any lakes around here, much less Darbone. So that was it was really cool that some of these guys from as far away as those actually get to come and fish around here.
We have a ton of people come in from out of town, and I get to meet quite a few of them in the Crappie Masters and ACT tournaments. They come through needing different things, and it's a great group of guys. A few hundred guys at a time come through, and there's a lot that come into town just to fish because they've heard about the lake. They don't even care about tournament fishing. They're just here to see it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely on the rise, you know. If we do right and hopefully get some back and get some support, we can get those fish up there where like everybody wants them to be. You know, some of those big old good ones, man. I tell you, we got a hold of some the other day. Like I was telling you, I got to experience the live scope for the first time, and we caught several good fish. And hey, we were out there for I think we were out there for 5 hours. It was mid 40s. It was the day that the cold front was pushing in, and I wasn't ready to go. I really, you know, my buddy that was with me, you know, I think he had somewhere to be, and I'm like, golly, man, I can definitely see where, you know, it gets people on the water. It's to me, you know, as a hunter, I tell people it's kind of like trail cameras. You know, just because you got them on live scope don't mean you're going to catch them, and just because you got a deer on trail camera don't mean you're going to kill him. It just makes it fun to go out there and gives you a little bit more incentive to sit there a little bit longer and go a little bit more often.
Yeah, it'll definitely pull on that. If you have that competitive bug in you, it'll definitely pull on you to make you want to just see what you can really get into. And it does have a touch of hunting to it, in the sense of you're looking at them and you're trying to convince that fish to bite.
Mm-hmm.
And the hardest thing you'll ever do is drive by a fish to go to one that bites. And you can see him, and you know he should bite, but he may not.
Oh, man, we dropped, like I said, I bet I tried to put a lure in front of almost 100 fish the other day, and I think 16 of them bit. But it wasn't, I mean, it was fun because you're interacting, you know, without it, you're not 100% confident that there's going to be a fish there. However, with this thing, you know, when you drop it, you're looking at it, you put it right in front of him, and if they take it, they take it. And sometimes they'll trail it, and you think they're going to get it, and you get them a little bit away from that structure, and they'll go right back. And I'm like, oh my goodness, you got to be kidding me. But it is fun. Hey, there was a guy right beside us that didn't have live scope, and he caught more than we did. You know, so
that
it's
happens
just about,
at times.
It's just about knowing where the fish are.
Oh yeah, we have a lot of guys that are truly talented at what they do, but we always refer to as true sticks that pretty much don't need a lot of electronics to catch a fish. And those guys are flipping over into the electronics world, and it's doing nothing but making them a better stick, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So let's talk about gear prep, okay? Coming off deer season, coming off hunting season, duck season, this, that, and other, what kind of gear should our guys be looking for to use, and how do they need to get everything rigged up and ready to go, some of the maintenance that we need to be doing on this stuff before we hit that water?
Really, it kind of starts out with just drag out what poles you have and see, you know, strip line, go to fresh line. That's just probably the most important thing in my boat, is a good fresh line that is going to work for you, and make sure everything's tight and well-oiled as far as your reels are concerned. And then just inventory where you're at and with your tackle to see if you may need to go buy something down at the local store, or what you truly have sitting there.
Yeah.
You know, because a lot of times most of us will buy, you know, you'll buy redundants because you forgot that you bought 15 bags at K&M this week, you know?
Right. That's right. Now, when you say oil in the reels, explain to some like me, be honest with you, man. I'm probably a guy that I will run whatever I had last year, not even think about oiling anything. But yet the guy that I went with the other day, he does. And man, you can definitely tell the difference in smooth and just easy going. And so how does that go down? How does one oil properly oil a reel?
Like on a spinning reel type, it's you pull the front face off of it and drop a few drops of oil on a bearing or two that's under that face of that reel. And pull your handle. It has bearings inside that handle. You can drop a couple drops of oil in there. Most of us are using a 3-in-1 oil or quantum reel sauce, which is like a little dropper. And then if you go over to bait casters, you clean the level wind off and drop you a couple drops of oil in that level wind to smooth it up.
Okay.
It gets much past that. Most of us, there's a few guys around that offer reel cleaning services where when you go climb on a stand in October, carry them a handful of them and let them clean them. So when you get back out of the stand at the end of the season, you can put your stuff back together and go back to fishing.
I like that idea. I really like that idea. I didn't know there were people out there that did that kind of stuff.
Yeah, Honey Hole Tackle has a drop and pick where you can drop your reels off and pick them back up. And I believe I want to say that Kenny was talking about doing that at K&M, and there's a couple of local guys that are doing, you know, cleaning reels and fixing things, you know, bearings lock up in them, what have you. And they'll level winds on your bait casters will start hanging up, and they can fix all that. And if you like me, most every reel you got in the boat's probably a couple $100 a piece.
Mm-hmm.
Or you want to fix them instead of just replace them, you know.
I had no idea fishing rods were that expensive until I was scoring one day up at K&M, and I'm just walking around, and I'm like, I looked at Justin Bailey, and I'm like, man, you got to be kidding me. He's like, no, man, I'm telling you, that's the going price. I'm like, yeah, at least if somebody came in, bought four or five of them. I'm like, you got it's definitely, they're definitely expensive, but when it comes down to it, it's the good ones. They're really, really nice to have in your hand.
It can make a difference in a sense of whether you enjoy it or not. You know, if a guy, you can walk in there and buy $100 or $80 entry level decent rig and still do what you need to do if you know a little bit about how to pick it, or somebody helps guide you on how to pick it. Whereas, and it's just like guns, you can buy a single shot 22 and get it done. But if you, as you step up in quality, you step up in a better tool to use when you're out there, which in turn just makes it a better day a lot of times.
You're right. You're exactly right about that. Sometimes the better the tool, the better the experience. You're 100% accurate on that one. I'll give you that. That's good. That is good. So we've got that down. Now let's talk about line. What kind of line you like to use?
I'm running 10-pound or 12-pound fluorocarbon line. I'm using CR Red Label, which is just readily available most anywhere you want to talk about. You know, my favorite two is K&M and Honey Hole.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sitting on the shelf anytime you walk in the door. But you can also hit a button and get it online just real quick, too. Some of the guys are like our traditional rear-seated poles, you know, fishing around the trees. We're using 8-pound monofilament in what's called Iser line, or really any brand you like. If you've been using Trilene forever, stay with it. It's just fresh is the key, you know, because it'll get a memory built to it or kinks in it and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And you just want to keep a fresh roll on there every few months, strip it, or if you feel it in your hand feels kind of ratty, strip it and start over.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And eyes, you mentioned earlier when we were talking, you know, eyes, checking the eyes, making sure they're not busted or bent or anything like that. What should somebody do should they come across an eye that they didn't realize, you know, may have gotten stepped on or something got dropped on it and now it's broken? Where do they go with that?
As far as I know right now, Honey Hole offers a drop service where you can run in, they'll wrap a single eye. If it's multiples, like your rod, if you look at the clearing on your rod and it's already starting to dry right on you and it's starting to really look sun beat, I'll kind of lay that one to the side unless it's something that's given to me. And then I'll lay it to the side and get something new, you know. But I've got a couple that have been around my whole life that come through family that I'll never get rid of, you know. So I fix them no matter what.
Yeah, yeah. Do you fish with those older rods like that very often, or do you just kind of have them around?
I mostly have them around hanging on the wall. My grandpa and mom built rods in the 70s and 80s for a lot of guys like Steve Dana and guys like that come up in the old Ford series. And so I have some of that stuff around that they built, you know.
Man, that's cool. I bet that is something to see.
Yeah, there's a lot more detail on the old rods and what's called the butt wine below your base between your pistol grip to your first eye. They used to get real intricate with it, where now there's just a label of what the action of the rod is, and then there's the eyes themselves are really small with a simple wrap on them, which is really, really clean look, but it's not near the artwork it was. And all the way up to probably early 90s, they did all the diamond butt wines and all the different stuff with multiple threads.
So all that is basically cosmetic. It has no purpose for any of the fishing part.
No, back in the day, they didn't have the handles and, you know, the different grips we have now and stuff, and the actions in the newer modulus graphite rods. So they were using the wrap to strengthen the eye, or strengthen the rod by the amount of eyes on the pole as well as that butt wind down there in front of your handle. That was all to change the action of the rod.
Okay.
Medium light on through a medium heavy or heavy action pole.
Yeah. Now that makes sense. That makes sense. I'm glad you brought up the weight. So early season, is there a specific weight you like to use kind of action rod at all?
Well, if we're into the true crappie scene, I'm chunking a 7-foot rod, medium action to medium light. I particularly use impulse rods out of Texas for that series. They're custom built, couple hundred bucks a piece or so, and are super sensitive for those long distance casts. And got a lot of backbone, but don't weigh anything, you know?
Yeah. I want to get to a story here in a little bit when we go and talk about life. I just thought about this story when you mentioned live cast about my dad. I don't know if you keep up with me on Facebook very much, but my old man he's a character. And I got a story about, you said long cast, and I immediately went to him, and I'm like, oh yeah, I got to tell that story. So let's shift gears. Can you think of any other thing on gear that we need to do before we go into boat maintenance?
Really, it's just kind of, you know, pick through your stuff and see what you got and kind of get you a game plan for. I got a little box that's my go-to, and it's got my weights, hooks, just easy go-to stuff that is sitting at a finger's touch to where you're going to hang up, you're going to break off. And if you can, like me, I hit spot lock on my trolling motor and I can sit there and tie back up in just a few minutes time, where if you got to get in and dig for it, it just makes everything that much more taxing throughout the trip, you know, is if it's sitting right there at your organized in your tackle tray, it's nothing to it.
You know, and I'm going to relate everything you just said to the first 2 or 3 days of deer season, because I always say the first 2 or 3 hunts for me are just a trial run. If I kill something, it's just dumb luck, because I forgot my light, or I forgot this, or I forgot that. And once you go a little bit, you know, then you make sure you got all your stuff. And just what you just said is exactly what I related that to. It's just, you know, the easier it is to access, the better time you're going to have. And like you said, you can tie on another one and go right to it versus having to hunt for it. So that is a good tip. Guys, you probably want to start doing this stuff. You know, don't do it the day before you go fishing. You know, you kind of want to pace yourself into looking for stuff, making sure you got everything you need. Give yourself a little time and get all your stuff together. So when it comes down to boats, Gary, you and I said before, and I mean, you said, you know, how you put it up is everything from the year before, right?
Yes, sir. Charged batteries, treated fuel, you know, I prefer to, whether it be, if it's a 4-stroke, change engine oil and gear oil going into setting it up to go deer hunt, or, you know, putting it up for the winter. Or even some guys put up starting at midsummer when it gets 95 degrees, they quit fishing. And they may or may not get back in the water before they get in the woods, you know. And if you put one up with fresh fluids in it and treated fuel, you can go, when you do climb out deer stand or get off of a big job, you can run right out there and hook up to it, check, make sure everything's charged up, and flip a few switches on, make sure stuff's in working order, and take off for that 2 or 3 hours you could sneak away from the house, you know?
Mm-hmm. Like me right now, I've got to bring mine up there. You know, I got a 4-stroke Yamaha, and I bought the boat from an old boy about a year and a half ago. And so it's time. I don't get it on the water very often, but you know, I want to make sure I've got all the good, everything, like you just said, all the fluids in it look good and everything. I'd much rather let you guys look at it than pay the price of ruining something like that.
Yeah, it's, we're fortunate. We have a boat ramp that we back everything down and actually truly water test it. That's been, I'll tell you, I've got $60,000 in tools, but that boat ramp and actually seeing it in true action and working the way it's supposed to means more than anything I got in that shop, because if you can see it run down the lake and hear it, you can put your finger on what may be going on that needs to be addressed, or you know at the end of that work order that you handed a man back something that's supposed to be right, you know.
And I like that aspect. You know, you make sure you get them everything that's right. And I think when y'all had that put in where you built and put in that ramp, I think I knew right then. I said, that's a big deal. That's going to help out a lot. They can actually, when they're working on something, you know, make sure that it is 100% like it needs to be before the customer gets it back. So that's a good thing right there.
Well, and we'll find things that a customer wasn't even aware of. That's, you know, I always say it that really, and a lot of guys, I have guys that take care of things, way overthink and take care of things to the 10th degree. And then have guys that if it went to the fishing hole and came back, it's good, no matter if it really was or not. Mm-hmm. And I get them in there that they say, oh, just check a few things. I've been fishing. And I'm wondering how it went down the lake when I dip it in the water and start trying to figure, you know, check things out because it's in such rough shape.
Right.
And you call them and say, hey, did you notice so-and-so? Well, I kind of did, but I wasn't sure. Mm-hmm. So it helps, you know, and I invite them up to look, check it out, you know. So me personally, if I can look, see, and touch it, I understand it way more than I do somebody just telling me about it.
So
I invite them up to look and check it out. And a lot of times they, well, you know, fix it, you know, take care of whatever it is. I trust you.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you, when is a good time? They need, like, is right now kind of pushing it a little bit? Is the turnaround time a little long, or is it about, yeah, go ahead and start bringing them in because, you know, later on it's going to get busier? What do you suggest? Go.
Right now is about the perfect time. You know, I've worked on it for, I don't know, since I moved up here, I've worked on getting my guys that have a long laundry list of stuff to dump it off to me when they go get in the woods so we can get things handled. That way when they come out of the woods, they're ready to go. But if they haven't, or if everything's pretty much in working order, just want to touch up on things. First, right after first year, I try to get them to get in there because by the time, I'd say mid-February hits, basically a little bit after Valentine's hits, we're wide open.
I'll be there. And y'all open Saturday? I'll be there.
We've gotten to the point where we run Monday through Friday. We do a little bit of a deal where we let folks, if they work, have to get to work early and stuff, we let them drop off in front of the store and just call us and let us know what they need, you know, and things like that. And also let them pay over the phone and pick up after 5 o'clock to help them out.
Yeah, I work in Arkansas, but I've got a way I can get it there. Trust me. And I'm going to go ahead and get it up there. I know I've got one battery that needs to get replaced and, you know, just kind of go through and just make sure everything's good. So let the professional take a look at it.
I got you. That's one thing right now going through this cold weather. Guys need to get out there and hook your chargers up and get them batteries hot when it's cold. Because if you had one that's set up, you haven't attended to in a little while and it's low on charge and that cold weather comes in, it's going to kill it.
Mm. Okay.
So good hot charge helps that immensely. Matter of fact, when that freeze came in, I come out here and plug my boat up just for a peace of mind. You know, even though I knew it was charged, I still plugged it up.
Yeah. That's a good idea. And see, I didn't even think about that. So I'll probably have more than one battery that's going to need to be replaced. But hey, you know, that's me being a new boat owner, learning. You know, you hate to learn by fire or try by fire, but, you know, I guarantee it won't happen no more.
We have to have a little guaranteed money to keep us some sandwich money going on, you know.
There you go. I like it. That's right. Now, me and you were talking earlier about the live scope, about the sonar. Is there anything that, you know, if somebody's got one that they need to make sure and take a look at before they hit the water so that everything's good?
Just check. About everybody has them rigged up on either a pole or trolling motor. And it's, you know, Garmin recommends that you strap everything down with electrical tape instead of a tie strap. So I just, and that tape will dry rot over time. So you just want to go make sure all that's still where it was, make sure that it's not going to get pinched in anything. Because if you cut that transducer cable, there is a guy out there, Joey Cook, fixing them, but you're down for a week while he's fixing your stuff for a few $100, or you replace the whole transducer for close to $1,000. So, which turns a fishing trip into a sore subject at that point, you know.
A very sore subject, yes, sir. Man. But, go ahead.
Just checking fasteners, you know, check your troll motor bolts, make sure all that's tight, because over rough water in our beautiful rough roads we have around here, it'll shake things apart, you know.
Yeah, I hadn't even thought about that before, but you're exactly right. You know, stuff goes jarring and jamming around. I can bet that something like a trolling motor mount would work its way loose for sure.
Yeah, probably one in three boats. And when I stick my screwdriver on it, just checking things out, there's six bolts in most of them, and probably four out of six is loose.
Man, that's kind of scary.
It's, you know, I know that I ask a lot out of my equipment. I fish over 40 weekends a year and drag probably 15,000, 20,000 miles a year. So I have to touch my stuff pretty regularly to keep it right. And I just know that, and through that, you see what goes on. And it's not a major deal as long as you touch it every once in a while and don't let it catch you, you know?
Mm-hmm. That's some stuff. Man, I'm getting some information I'd have never even thought. You know, now that you say it, I think about it, but I'd have never even thought to check a trolling motor mount and make sure. I guess it's one of those things you just take for granted, and you're really in something like that. You can't take nothing for granted.
It just, it comes from, you know, a lot of time out there and seeing and checking. You know, the quickest way you can do it is just grab a hold of the troll motor shaft and pull on it. And if that base moves, it's loose. It'll show itself pretty quick. But same way with power pole brackets, jack plates, all of that stuff, even though it's Nylock nuts and high quality steel, or stainless steel, that for that fact, it still gets loose, and it may not make but a quarter round on it to tighten up, but it is loose, and over time that'll cause problems. It'll cause bolts to shear and things to happen. I've seen motors fall off of boats because they never checked their jack plates, you know.
Well, now the story about the long cast. So I told my dad about going fishing with Joe in the live scope, and I said, "Yeah, you can see so far out, and then you can see so far down." And and he said, "What do you mean?" And I said, "Well, you can see out there 50 feet." And I said, "Well, if you set it up, you can." And he said, "You gonna throw it that far?" I said, "No, Daddy, you don't throw it that far." I said, "You got a longer pole, and you kind of underhand it out there about, you know, if it's a little bit farther than the fish is, and you kind of want it to kind of come in, or you can drop it right on top of him." And then he said, "Y'all fishing with jigs or shiners?" I said, "We's fishing with jigs." And he is an old school shiner guy. And I could tell they was jig caught fish. They didn't taste right. And I said, "What?" And he was giving me a hard time. And then he said, "I tell you what I'll do. I'm going to take my little brim pole." He's got an ultralight that he likes to fish with. He said, "And I'm going to beat Joe Booth." I said, "No, I don't think so, Daddy. You need to, you know, get you a longer pole." He's got I don't know what kind of pole he's got, but somehow or another he came across a longer pole. I'm taking that other pole, and I'm going to beat him. I ain't got a cast way out there. I said, "Okay, you do what you got to do, Dad. You do what you got to do." So, He is a large fan of the shiner fishing, and he don't want to jig fish at all.
I tell you, the guys and it's an art, really. You think the shiner's just to throw it in the water and they'll bite it, and they do at times. But I've stayed with the jig so long that when I go to shiners, I do okay, but I'm not that, like, I wouldn't be as good as him because I'm not used to that bite.
And I think that's the thing about him and a jig, too, because he's not used to jig fishing. So right. He's more – it's all in what you're confident in, I suppose.
Oh, 100%.
You know, you go out there with what you're most confident in, you're going to be better with anything, you know. And so I'm trying to get Joe to line up a fishing trip, and I wish I was off work so I could go out there. I might would even do a live podcast right there from the boat to watch these two.
That'd be great.
Oh, it'd be fabulous, man, but – I gotta, you know, somebody's gotta make a living out there. So I gotta go to work while Dad's over there piddling. So, well, Gary, man, I really appreciate you tonight coming on and just talking real quick. I want to do more fishing style podcasts. I think there's a large market out there for our listeners that, you know, people who like well-rounded outdoorsmen that do a lot of stuff and think that's where the fishing would really help these guys out and gain a lot of in popularity. So I really appreciate you coming on, man. So tell everybody again, they can reach you guys at Ludwig. You got, what's your telephone number out there?
It's 318-595-5595 is our main location. Our phones are linked together. You call that number, you'll get the Monroe location, but they can send you anywhere in the business from Monroe to Farmville.
That's right. And you, do you ever work in the Monroe location?
Not normally. We have a really great crew there. Roy Hoy is our main guy over there in the shop. And then Mitch is there on the regular. And so is Dustin Balance and Will Norris. And Jamie Hill is our parks guy out there. All of us are boaters, fishermen. We do it because we love it, you know. Mm-hmm. So that kind of helps out when the customer walks in or somebody walks in and says, I need so-and-so. You kind of can relate to it pretty quick.
Yeah. Now, just for location-wise, guys, the Farmerville, Ludwig, is when you're going on the Highway 33 towards Ruston. As soon as you cross the lake, you'll see Rhett's Tails and Shells on the left. Ludwig is right beside it, right? Just right there. You'll see it. And then when you're in Monroe, it's on 165 South. Right before you get to Wichita Christian, you'll see Ludwig on the right. So it's the old, I believe it's Lynn John's location, isn't it?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Perfect place for a boat dealership. Got a large lot. Good guys work at both of them. You can't go wrong. You go talk to these guys out at Ludwig. I've been knowing Matt and Mitch my whole life. And so, you know, Mitch is going to do you right. When I say whole life, dude, I'm talking about we was little bitty, itty bitty boys growing up. So I've known that big headed rascal for a long time.
Been one of the best bosses I've ever worked for.
Well, you know, I remember when they worked, I think it was I can't remember if it was the glass plant or the OSB facility over in Simsboro, but they worked over there as millwrights, I believe. And
that's it.
Just started this bit, you know, just kind of went out. They knew, of course, they were racing boats at the time.
Right.
And I don't know if it was like professional racing or just some of that blue collar stuff we used to do on Lake Darvon. But I mean, those guys, you know, Mitch has always been able to fix stuff.
Right.
And they took to it and walked out on that limb like small business owners do. And now here they are. Man, it's a great success story right here in North Louisiana. And, you know, if you guys need any kind of stuff from boating wise assistance, go check them out. They're going to do you right. So, hey, dude, I appreciate you tonight, man. I'm about to go cook some supper and,
yes, sir.
And edit this thing down. And so, you've been a good podcast, brother, and I really appreciate you.
Yes, sir. Thank you and have a good night.
You too. Well, we did a little something different. I hope you guys like it. I want to do more fishing stuff. So if you like the fishing, let me know. I want to make sure I'm getting you guys stuff that you want to hear. So I'm liking Gary. Gary's a good dude. I'm going to take my boat out to Ludwig, let him work on it, do a little maintenance to it. I got some things I need to be fixed. If you guys need anything, call them up. Go see them. They're great guys. They're going to take care of you and do you right. Go check out our Facebook page. We've got all kind of t-shirts, hoodies, a couple hats left over. I got some more t-shirts ordered that I think you guys are going to like. So, man, it's going to be good. 2023 is going to be great for this podcast. We're going to grow. Like I said, I'd like to incorporate some fishing. So if you guys like that kind of stuff, keep feeding me some stuff to talk about, some people to talk to, and we'll get it going. My name is Greg Hicks. This is the Antlers and Hicks podcast. And as always, I'm going to encourage you guys to live your life past 20 yards. We'll see you next time.